There is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is down to Neil Prendergast, you know?
Fair play.
Talk to Neil Prendergast.
That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendergast Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
Please do be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendergast Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. You can text 0868 104 106. Paperwise this morning, awfully sad news. Yet more deaths on our roads. 52 now is the number of people who've been killed on Irish roads this year alone. We're already 10 more dead than the same period last year. And the latest to die, a woman and two young girls. It's the front page of making the Independent today. Woman and two girls, latest to die in carnage on our roads. It's from County Mayo, Claire Morris. Widespread shock, as you can imagine. The woman in her 30s and the girls both under 10. It's so tragic. It really and truly is. It's picked up on the front of the Mirror today. Mum and two girls in a car crash that took their lives. A head-on crash, unfortunately, between their car and a lorry. And they died. Guards now are attempting to contact the children's father, who's believed to be working overseas. And this happened yesterday afternoon in Clare Morris in County Galway. County Mayo, I should say. My sincerest apologies. And of course, we know of the cargo ship that rammed the bridge in Maryland and it collapsed. There will be a big inquiry, amongst other things, as to why it collapsed. Some papers are saying in as little as 3 seconds. Another one is saying 10 seconds. I think it's probably closer to three. It just came down in what looked like only a few seconds. The crew did issue a mayday call. They did their best, and that mayday call, to be fair to them, saved lives. This huge container ship, there's no stopping this. There just isn't any stopping this. I think it was doing it was doing 6 to 8 knots. You just couldn't. It's massive. And then the amount of containers, and these containers were all full of all sorts of different products, as you can well imagine. They were on their way. It was the start of a 27-day voyage to Sri Lanka, and they were just 20 minutes into it, and they actually were being steered by harbour pilots when they lost control. Power went off not once but twice, and too little too late in trying to reverse, well, bang it into reverse anyway. And I think that's why you saw so much smoke coming out of the funnels as the reverse gear was trying to cope with the knottage that it was travelling at the same time. Massive container ship slams into the bridge, and they're saying, how in God's name are only six feared dead, according to the Mail this morning? Well, that is the number. There was five vehicles on it. There were eight construction workers at the time fixing potholes. It's over 1.5 miles long, and they're saying that two were pulled from the very cold water. One was taken to hospital and the other required no help at all. But six others are feared dead. There's a massive air and sea rescue continuing trying to find them. But that's where we're at with that. And of course, it's dominating many of the news channels, obviously, and the front pages of some newspapers. There is one interesting story connected to it, and it's the story of a lad called Jaden. Makes the Independent this morning. So Jaden had expected to spend the night with his girlfriend on the north side of the river, but travelled back home after the pair had an argument. He went over and back. They weren't getting on. He went over and back like three times and then went home. Feeling guilty about the incident, he drove back at one stage to apologise, but he was sent away again by the girlfriend. So this was the third time that he crossed. So he was apparently the last person to use the bridge. He got over the bridge, his mother said, just 3 minutes before the bridge collapsed. And he was almost to our house when his girlfriend started texting him, asking him if he was okay. He thought she was texting because they were arguing, but actually said to him that the bridge had collapsed. So it's the story of an interview on some channel in America where she was saying, my son got over the crossing of the bridge just before it collapsed. It dominates many of the international papers as well. We will have some form of hate speech, but probably a watered-down version of what was originally planned. It's hard to know. At one stage earlier in the week, I got the impression that Simon Harris was going to scrap the hate speech legislation. But now it seems the government said to water it down. The incoming Taoiseach and the Justice Minister said that the legislation will be amended, but that it will happen. It's a story making the Mirror today, and indeed it's also making a lot of the broadsheets. May well come back to that throughout the course of the morning as to exactly what's behind the hate speech legislation. It's very much in the news in Scotland because it's just been passed in Scotland and it's just come into force. When you talk about hate and aspects of, you know, people and how we interact with others. Two interesting ones from the schools this morning. One is the secondary schools and the other is the primary schools, where the ASTI, this is the Association of Secondary Teachers in Ireland, they're saying that one in five teachers has been cyberbullied. Now, this is not physical bullying, but it is bullying in the online world, with 20% of the perpetrators who are cyberbullying teachers being the students' parents themselves. So 80% of it is students bullying teachers online. 20% of it is their parents doing it. So many of the perpetrators are the parents, the students. They're saying a large number of teachers are experiencing bullying on social media. A lot of it with the use of a mobile phone. Upskirting is becoming an awful problem for teachers in secondary schools, apparently. Putting false information about teachers up online. The other one then from the INTO, this would be primary, calling for more support to deal with violent students in primary school. Go figure. Such small children being so physically violent. And I suppose violence can be physical and it can be verbal. But apparently the rising levels of aggression in the classroom is directly linked to a lot of different things, but including the children's actual mental health. Now, mental health can be a very broad brush, but nearly 60% of primary teachers say they experienced physical aggression from their students in the past year. Physical aggression is the laying upon of hands, isn't it? Or fists, or things like that. That's quite alarming, the times we live in. And in the times we live in, while we wish to be charitable and to be kind to our neighbours on a world scale, the way that things are going these days, it's just not possible for it to continue without some kind of change. Even the government is seeing that now. So they're looking at different aspects of asylum and migration and people coming to Ireland for a better life. But those that are coming with our passports are a serious problem. So there is a new EU pact now amongst member states. It's the front page of the Mail today. And it will oblige member states, Ireland included, to have some kind of screening. And the screening would have to take place within a two-month period of those that are arriving at our borders and don't have any paperwork or don't have passports. So there would have to be some kind of screening and security checks of those arriving. And migrants that arrive here without passports will have to go through mandatory border procedures to find out whether they've got a legitimate claim for asylum or not, and that it would have to happen within a two-month period. Now, taking the temperature of this on air in the recent past, what many people actually want is anybody who comes into the country without any documentation to be told you cannot enter the country at all. And people felt that when we were talking about it on air, because they were saying, well, they had to get on a plane or a boat in the first place with some kind of documentation. What did they do with it? Tear it up on the plane? I don't know. But it could well be an answer to a problem. I'm not quite sure as to whether it will be, as speedy as it should be. If it's got a two-month limit on it, I think it'll still lead to chaos. But you know how more and more hotels now have flipped, and indeed, I suppose, a typical example of that is Trebogan. Well, there's nothing wrong with what, say, Trebogan have done, and have flipped to Ukrainian families or what have you, for profit, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, that's the capitalist world we live in. Nothing wrong with that. Big money to be made in it. But all over the country, less and less hotel space now can be used by, as a typical example, tourists or people on weekend breaks or things like that. Or back in the day when you'd get married and have a reception in a hotel. So all that's gone. So now they're saying that there must be at least one hotel left in a town or a city or a village. It's bizarre even saying that, but the Irish Times this morning says the government's landmark new immigration plan will also commit to avoiding the use of the last hotel in a town to accommodate asylum seekers, that there must be one left. It's almost like the last pub in the village with beer, or the pub with no beer, the last hotel in the village or town that actually won't be taking refugees or asylum seekers, that there has to be one left for everybody else. Isn't it even bizarre saying that? Thanks to 0868104106. Just so that you know, there was talk 2 weeks ago by the judge involved in the Richard Satchwell case, that if the Gardaí didn't get the book of evidence in by yesterday, there was a chance that the case would be against Richard Satchwell would be struck out. Well, yesterday The book of evidence was served. So everything happened yesterday, right down to the wire. What happens next in this case is that all of the video copies of the Garda interviews with Richard Satchwell over the period of time since he was first questioned and taken into custody now also have to be given to the defence. So that's where we're at with that. And indeed, when you talk about, you know, those that might think that, you know, you need to be very careful about decisions and things that governments decide on. And I get a little bit touchy-feely when I see stories like, most of us are living in homes that are too big for our needs. And you wonder, does that mean they're going to come after people in their own homes? If there's two in a house with four bedrooms, would there be legislation at some stage passed to say, sorry, pal, you might have worked hard for it, you might have paid the mortgage, you might have reared your family in it, but actually, we're going to take it off you because we need it for others who have younger families. It's too big for you, so we're going to send you somewhere else that's a little smaller. I don't know, it's just a thought, but more than two-thirds of people in the Republic are living in homes that are too big for their needs. And I'd be amongst them, don't you worry about that. I mean, it's not as if I'm talking in a vacuum here. They'll be also saying the same about me. In other words, the Republic's homes have more bedrooms than the occupants require. What are your thoughts on that? What is one supposed to do? I know downsizing is great, but it mightn't be for everybody, where their memories and their happy times and their home and the work and the investment and all the hard effort to pay the mortgage went into it. Maybe you'd want to see out your time in your home, even if it's got four bedrooms and there's only two of you. Text 0868 104 106. But it's on the front page of the Irish Times this morning, so obviously there are those that are saying, no, you got to move, you know, voluntarily, please, but you got to move. Give the house up to families that need it more. And then, of course, we're never too far from a price increase when it comes to a pint. And in fairness, one thing you can say about Diageo is that they are consistent. It's the third pint price rise in 18 months. So people are crying into their beer. As opposed to being at breaking point, people are at breaking point, and this is very much stout of order. So the latest increase will come into effect on the 15th of April. Guinness, Carlsberg, Rockshore, and Hophouse. And watch this space for details. The other brewers will follow suit. So you're looking at another price increase, 6 cent on the price of a pint, announced. The latest hammer blow to the pub trade, because undoubtedly many people, well, some people, nearly said many people, some people will refuse to pay it. I don't know. Will it bring, what's the price of a pint of stout now? Is it about 5.50? I know down in Port Magee it's a fiver, and I suppose in many rural places, you know, they try and keep the price as low as they can. You go into cities and bigger areas, it's dearer. So I imagine we'll be right in saying anywhere between a fiver and 5.50. But all of the papers talking about it today. And another thing regarding pubs. On Friday will be the 20th anniversary of the smoking ban. And apparently they're saying in the papers that the Ireland's workplace smoking ban, it wasn't just pubs, of course, it was in loads of different places, the workplace, public buildings, also things like that. 3,700 lives have been saved in less than 4 years, the first 4 years after the introduction. Do you imagine the amount of lives that were saved in the 20 years? Imagine an awful lot of those lives that were saved were people working in the pub trade itself, people putting in 8 hours a day or 8 hours a night in a very, very smoky atmosphere, 5 or 6 days a week, working weekends and everything. So the official anniversary of the ban is actually on Friday. So I hope to have an opportunity to talk on the topic on Friday, it being the 20th anniversary on Good Friday. So your thoughts on that will be welcome in the coming days. A lot of other stories in the papers today. One of them is very interesting to me because it's kind of personal. It's a story that makes the UK Times. And it's the story of a ball that went into somebody else's garden. Now, the UK Times says that a father who retrieved his son's football from the next door garden must now pay nearly €20,000 in compensation because the garden next door was belonged to a lawyer, a barrister actually, and he got sued for it. So Haim Adler told a judge that he was furious that his 8-year-old son had been left in tears when his neighbour refused to return a ball that he'd kicked over the fence. He was enraged so much by his neighbour's behaviour that he stormed into the garden snarling and mocking the neighbour, a fellow called Warren Bergson. So he returned even the next day again and tried to push his way into the neighbour's flat while demanding the return of the ball. Now, trying to push his way into the flat was a step too far, so the neighbour, who's a barrister, sued him for trespass and will get £20,000 compensation. Why he just didn't throw the ball back in over the fence, I have absolutely no idea. It would be the common sense thing to do, but we live in crazy times. But I remember, I was reading that this morning, and back came the memory of when I was very small. I don't know how old I was. I could have been 8, 9, 10 years old. I don't know. We were playing ball in an area. I'm not going to name the estate out of respect for people that live there, but it was the greater Beaumont Ballantemple area. And I remember at one stage the ball went over the back wall into a person's garden. Now they had big high palm trees, very closely knit, and the ball was in there. So it would be perfectly normal for kids back then to just go in the front gate and just kind of sneak in around the side of the house and just get up and climb up and get the ball. I was in goal. I had to go and do it. So that's what I did. Started climbing. All I remember was this massive big hand grabbing me the back of my shirt by my neck and just dragging me down from the tree. I remember this big, huge, big man. Obviously, all men would have been bigger when you're an 8-year-old, but he looked like a big, massive, mountainy man. And there was a really strong smell of drink off him. And he gave me 2 unmerciful digs with his fist into the back of the head. Really, like, I mean, it just kind of absolutely, I mean, it wasn't into the chest, so it didn't win me, but you know what I mean? It just, like, it was painful. And then you're in shock, like, and you don't actually know, my God, what is actually happening here with this guy? And then he dragged me by the back of the neck right across the garden, and he threw me out onto the ground, out onto the footpath. We never got the ball, and you forget about it, like, when you're young. You just kind of dust yourself down and get on with it. But all of it came back again this morning. I was thinking, oh my God. And as an adult now, even thinking that, you're saying, what was going on in that man's life? Firstly, in the middle of the day, drinking, and then reacting in the way that he did with such anger against like an 8 or 9 year old who was just retrieving a ball. I was thinking there must have been awful issues or struggles going on in his life to react like that. If it were to happen now, it would be a very different world if something like happened now, because I would hope to think that a son or a daughter would go home and tell their parents. But like we didn't back in the day. We just didn't. I mean, that would have been, oh, for God's sake, guys, that would have been early 70s stuff. But if it happened now, I was only reminded of it because of the court case in the UK. I mean, like it's just like, you know, so much anger, isn't there?
There is a huge amount of anger. I just think that's so scabby, isn't it? It's like the definition of the word scabby. Like the ball going into your back garden and just being... Like, I understand that some people, and they might live in a place where they're being constantly fired in, but it only takes 2 seconds to pick it up and throw it back over the wall. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and then just, it can kick off and it goes from bad to worse.
It's such a simple thing to do.
And you want to get on with your neighbours, and on that basis, something is you're going to say, oh my God, not again.
Yeah.
But just because you want to get along, just... suffer it,
and like we have very understanding neighbours where we are, because we have a big gap. We were very lucky to have a big back garden, but our neighbours next door had a glass house, so you can imagine that was subject to a little bit of abuse over the years. At one stage never forget it, I got this ball and it was way over pumped, just football, and I hit, my dad had this vegetable patch, and you know, it was kind of railway sleepers were keeping the patch and thing, and the ball bounced, skipped along the floor, hit the corner of the sleeper, looped up over the fence, straight through the glass.
Oh, man.
I didn't even kick it straight.
That is exasperating.
But
you got to pay for the glass.
And,
like.
And look, that's what we did. But it was always very like, look, there's no problem. Like, we can sort it out. You know, it was like, and now their kids, when they're grown up now, but when they were kids, we gave them the trampoline that I would have had.
And that's the way
you have to, like, I just don't understand how people are so scabby about it. Like, we used to play up in Beaumont as well, up in the corner green there by the nursing home. And we'd be forever running into the nursing home getting footballs and this, that.
Sure, where's the harm in it?
Never, ever did they ever give us any. They was always very happy. I mean, we talk about, you know, oh, kids are spending too much time inside on their PlayStation and, you know, they're not getting enough time outside, and we hear all this. But then at the same time, you're being told, okay, well, go out and play ball.
But way back in the day, you were out all day, and I'd love to get people's thoughts on it. You were out all day from morning to night in the summertime. Nobody ever wanted to know where you were. It's a bit like dogs back then.
Yeah.
You know, dogs are like family members now, but in the past, they were just wild. Just went anywhere.
Throw them out and leave them back in for dinner. Yeah.
You just went back home when you were hungry.
But that was it. Like, and then,
you didn't go home and tell your parents anything.
No, and I suppose you didn't want to be. Well, you knew that whatever you'd probably get from whoever it was that gave you a thump, you'd get it twice as worse if you came home and told your parents that you were out. But I definitely think that, like, nowadays we're talking about kids not getting out. But the reason they're not is because A, they're being sheltered, and B, because people like this, people who are, you know, he's now having to pay 20 grand.
Yeah, but he did try and push his way into your man's flat. that. That's trespass.
What is that, 20 grand's worth of? You know what I mean?
Probably could have turned physical, but your man started it by not throwing the ball back.
I just think there's an awful, it's an awful world that you could be that scabby to a child and get 20 grand up on
text
it.
Text 0868104106. Could be a lot worse. You could be living in North Korea. Do you know that in North Korea, jeans are banned since the 1990s, apparently. You're not allowed to wear jeans. They call it an example of Western imperialism. I've no idea why. They're so comfortable. I mention that because, you know, Alan Titchmarsh, the gardener, he's got a very popular television show. They love it in North Korea. But the despot, Kim Jong-un's state television channel, has been told and ordered to blur out. They can show the show, they can broadcast it, but they have to blur out Alan Titchmarsh from the waist down so the jeans can't be seen. We live in crazier times. And if that's not crazy enough for you, somebody came across a baby hedgehog on the pavement yesterday and took it to an animal hospital only to find out that it was actually a hat bobble. You know, the big bobbly thing that goes on the top of the beanies and what have you, or the hats. They thought it was a baby hedgehog, so much so that the woman even put in a small dish of food next to the little critter to tempt it to snuffle out its little nose and to buy it and eat a bite. It wasn't a hedgehog at all. It was the bobble of a hat. Oh, spare me.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text 0868 104 106. I need your help, lads. Saw a three-line text come in there yesterday, and I just wanted to lay it on you. It says, Neil, I'm having an argument with herself about her spending €130 a week on shopping for two kids and two adults. Would that be about right? Most of the shopping goes to waste anyway, but she won't listen to me. Now, that in itself leaves an awful lot of conversation undone, or a conversation that needs to be had. Firstly, I don't know what kind of rock you're living under, or, you know, whether you get out as much as you should, but €130 a week for a full shop for two adults and two children seems low to me. And I'm wondering if there are many people listening to me would agree. I mean, I kind of split my shopping between the likes of Aldi and Dunn's, the odd time Tesco, and I try and keep it in the village and Douglas and what have you. But I certainly was in Dunn's last weekend, and I got two regular bags now. I'm not talking about huge jumbo bags, just the regular 70 cent recycling bags that you get in a shopping center. Two of them. And they weren't even totally full. One was pretty much full, and the other was maybe three quarters full. €72 it cost me. This is for two bags that weren't even full. So imagine, €130 for a full week's shop for two adults and two kids. I don't think that's big money. I think the only thing I can tell you as the husband or the dad in the house is the next shop, go do it yourself. And be fair and honest about what you're getting. You know, don't be scrimping. Get the things that you normally get. The food waste is another issue that should be tackled anyway. But I personally don't think that a full week shop for two adults and two children, €130, is an awful lot of money. On the basis that you just get, I get more and more shocks now when I go shopping because I'm thinking, surely not. Surely, be to God, that should have been under €50. You know, when you think of it, like, particularly with all of these deals you get, and that, and I know that you get, you know, a fiver off this and 10 off that if you spend 50 and stuff like that. But I often wonder, is that like a false economy? But anyway, that's for another day. But €130 a week for a shop for two adults and two children, no. I actually don't think that it's about right. I think that it's actually lower than I would have thought it would have been. I would have said maybe 150, maybe 160, if you're to be honest about it, for a full shop. But anyway, your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. And while we talk a lot about the state of our city and have been since Monday was the day we had the chief executive in, and then Tuesday we were doing a lot of digesting of what was said on the programme on Monday morning in my chat with Anne Doherty. But we talk about the city centre, we talk about all of the different suburbs, all the wonderful work that's been done in Bishop Lucy Park, all of the marina that's been developed and areas like that, and, you know, talk about green spaces and cycle lanes and footpaths and huge money spent on different things, including the Crawford. But yet there's one area that continues more than any to be constantly ignored when it comes to deterioration and dereliction. And that's Blackpool. Now, I know there is some construction going on there, but and that's fine. But a construction of a building in isolation all on its own doesn't actually do anything to fix the entire fabric of an area. And we were reminded of that by the Baldy barber, Mick Moriarty, following my conversation with Ann Doherty. He joins me by WhatsApp. Mick, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
Would that be fair to say that in spite of all of the other talk for other areas, the one that's, you know, forgotten about mostly, pretty much all the time, is Blackpool?
Absolutely, absolutely. She was out here a few weeks ago because Micheál Martin was opening the, you know, apartments or flats above in Blackpool. We haven't seen Ann Doherty here. Any bit of flooding or anything, I haven't seen her here, and I'm chairman of the flooding still, and I'm involved in the business association here as well. We haven't seen too many people of the hierarchy in City Hall. I actually joined the CBA, the Corporate Association, years ago, hoping under Ray Doherty at the time, for use of him. And he came out and he told us what to do, and we did. But I thought the CBA would come out and help us under the wings. And we got on to the people in Wilton. They wanted to be under the wings of the CBA as well. And CBA is only for inner city.
Inner city, yeah.
I discovered that. Yeah. But I talked with them on board, and in fairness, like Larry Joan Owens, he was very good to us at the time as well. But Blackpool is still decimated. People are doing nothing for the area, I can tell you. We have a people.
But if apartments are being built, that is something being done for the area, isn't it? Because a lot of the council flats out there, they were only fit for knocking, like, weren't they?
No, Neil. No, you're wrong there.
Okay.
I can tell you now. It took so much lapses when they were knocking down doors. The construction was so good in them, there was no need to knock them. They were perfect. I often was up there at a party up there long ago, Neil.
Are you talking about up around the Glen, is it, or what?
In Mel Flats.
Okay.
They were fantastic inside there. I mean that now. You could have 20 people dancing in the front room together, at least. It was absolutely fabulous. There was no need to knock down those apartments at all.
I always thought that all of those that were built, say, in the 60s or the 70s, had awful problems with cold and damp and insulation.
Yes, you would have that. But the way modernisation is going now, you can always pump stuff into buildings now, today. You can see all the houses being wrapped around. They could have done that very easy without knocking it down, I'll be quite honest, Dale.
Mm.
But I talked to a few customers yesterday in the shop. They were delighted with you. And it was right that no one else spoke to her, only yourself, because you have to ask her the questions. And she avoided a lot of questions.
Well, I know, yeah. Well, unfortunately, hard questions need to be asked, but you don't want to be across as overly negative all of the time either, you know?
Yeah.
That's wearisome, like, just to be constantly finding problems.
We won't see city council anymore. We'll see all the people out for the elections out shortly. They'll all be out, knocking at the door. And in 10 weeks' time, they'll all be gone about Blackpool again. Oh, we'll do this and we'll do that.
What does Blackpool need? I mean, I know our issues up around Shandon and, there, the butter exchange and stuff like that is appalling and it's an absolute disgrace. But what does the greater village of Blackpool need?
Well, on my street alone, on Great William Ryan Street, we had 5 pubs. There's not a pub here. The whole place is decimated. I mean, I can't believe in the last 2 years... our business around the area, Thomas the fishman there now, Tom Denny, he's finding it hard to get fish. I'm finding it hard to keep my customers. 3 of my staff have left me. I know now I put it up for sale, but the shop is still open. I'm back working 5 days a week. We're trying to keep the place going. And to Louise Jordan, the community centre, I must say this at her group every Saturday, they're out cleaning the place. They shouldn't have to do that. City council should have enough of people employed in every part of the city, not just Blackpool. You have all these community people, Ballincollig. I live in Ballincollig. I was born there. And Tom Butler and all these people outside there are brilliant. Like, but why should the ordinary people on a Saturday come around, spend their time in the lashing rain, picking up rubbish when they should be employed by the Cork City Council?
Is it businesses? Is it more business and more shops and things that Blackpool needs? Or is it more people to live in the area?
Well, you need more people in the area. But see, unfortunately, Neil, in every community now, if there's a shopping centre, once the post office goes in there, like it has in Blackpool and other places, the area around Blackpool now is gone. Once Mass is over in the morning, you won't see anyone around our area anymore.
Okay, so once you take the pub out of a community, or once you take the post office out of a community, you very quickly see the result of it. Is that it?
Exactly.
And if you take the chemist out of it, then more so.
Well, we are lucky that we have three chemists here in Blackpool. We have Tig, and we have the one with Willen Lane.
And how come have all five pubs? I mean, I can understand five pubs is probably too much, but you would think that there would be one to two still remaining, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, the Bridge Inn is gone, Halley's is gone, the Unicorn, Clary's, and Liam Daly's. They're all gone, and they're all good pubs. We have the Bear Haven over behind us, and you have Quinlan's down on the Watercourse Road. Yeah. And the Constellation.
Yeah.
The other pubs that are there. But then you have to go up to Blackpool to the Groves and Gainey's and the Blackpool Tavern, I think it's called now at the moment, Sports Bar.
Yeah. Maybe there was just too, when you add all of those together, maybe there was just too many pubs. I mean, you could look at other towns and villages across Ireland. Somebody told me in Skibbereen, sorry, my apologies, in Carsevina one stage, there was something like 52 pubs on the main street.
Oh, yeah. I think it was 18 in Blackpool.
But 18 pubs, like, God almighty.
Different drinking times, Neil. Different drinking times. People haven't gone to the pubs now anymore. I mean, you
but you remember, well, if there was 18 side. Pubs, say, in Blackpool, and God knows how many on Shandon Street at one stage.
That's right.
There must have been an awful lot of money spent in the pubs that possibly should have been kept in the home.
That's right. Quite correct. I remember we have Good Friday here now. And I remember seeing guys standing outside Mannix's pub, as it was called that time, and they'd be waiting to see would the Bear Haven open and would Mannix's open. And then they'd come in to me and say, Easter Saturday morning, and they'd say, Mick, were you open yesterday? I said, I was watching it for 2 hours trying to get into the pub. Oh, flip it. I could have come over and got my hair cut yesterday. And I said, did you get in? We did, he said, we got in.
On the sly, is it?
Oh, yeah. Ah, yeah, but that was a big thing that time. That was a big thing. But I'd be laughing, like, there'd be 30 fellas outside Mannix's bar looking at the Bear Haven or looking up the road to the Unicorn, wherever the case be.
But isn't that kind of sad, without wanting to be pointing fingers at people, like, that they would be doing that when maybe they got a wife and kids at home?
What I had, you was, see, it was a day off, and most of these lads were on the building line, and they got a day off, and they were the night with themselves. You know, that's what they did on the day off. They could do nothing else, you know. Yeah. When they do a bit of Gary or something like home, at home. But unfortunately, going back to Blackpool, Neil, like, I mean, it has changed completely, you know. It's lovely now to see that there's Ukrainians living next door now to me. There are 9 people gone in. There's a mother and 2 children. But there's about 18 people now living in the credit union. They have 9 units inside there. There's no men there, no men. It's women and children only. Yeah. Mm. And it's lovely to see the place being used up. But you're going back to
the
top.
And is the Commons still being used as a centre?
It is. I'm making more money than they would the other way.
Yeah. And is everybody all right? Is everybody all right with that, in the sense that many people would have been patrons there and visited there and eaten there and had functions on there?
Well, the people who were the customers there were very upset, but then again, they have moved on to something else. Now, there is talk that in 6 months' time, that is going to reopen as a motel again.
All right, yeah.
So that's just a talk. But you'll go back about football there, Neil, in your days. Up in Quarry Lane, we used to have football, right? And on Good Friday. But it'd be an overflow. So I was one of the overflows now because I was too young. But we were sent down to O'Connell Street to play football by Roy Keane's uncle, Pat Lynch. And they give us a ball and tell us go up to O'Connell Street. And we could play football.
There's very few cars around there.
There was no cars there. Like, we used to play football outside our outside my shop. It was fabulous. We had great times, you know.
Yeah.
I live in Ballincollig, and I see 2 brothers and a lad next door, and they're out in the garden morning, noon, and night playing football. And it's a lovely thing to see.
Okay. You know?
We're still open anyway.
Did you put it on the market though? The barbershop.
It is. It's on the market. Fellas are giving out to me for, one fellas said to me, what are you packing up for? I said, are you retired? I am. He says, how long? 9 years. How old are you? 69. Well, I said, I'll be 18 4 years' time. And I said, I can't last forever.
You think you're immortal,
yeah. I can't go. But I've advertised looking for help, Neil. I can't get it. No one wants to go on the books. And I mean that now.
They want cash, is it?
Yeah, up to €150 a day.
So if you're looking for a barber, that barber wants €150 cash off the books every day.
Yes, that's right. That's 800 a week.
Cash.
I mean, cash. That's right.
And is that commonplace now?
Oh, that's a big thing, Audi. A big thing.
Cash.
A big thing. Yeah, yeah. They want it. I won't take anyone on. I'll give them 13 euros.
Sure, you couldn't. Like, how could you? Wait, you'd be literally hiding. You'd be trying to hide 800 euro from the revenue. It's impossible.
Quite. You couldn't do it. But it'd been, how much would he bring in? He'd have to bring 450 a day if you're given 150 a day. He has to bring three times more than what he earns.
Looking for 150 cash in hand. What would you have to charge for a haircut for that?
Well, I was at a meeting. I was invited to a meeting by the younger barbers a few weeks ago, Neil. And when they heard my prices, they couldn't believe 16 euro. The average price now is 23 to 28 for a dry cut.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right. Yeah.
But I mean, there's no need for that, because I mean, if you do two haircuts an hour, 32 euro an hour, the barber is covered, and you're paying your expenses.
And do you think there's many barbers, or maybe even hairdressers and things like that, are paying cash in hand every day off the books?
Oh well, yeah, because if any phone call, they have to. I mean, but they can't. I was talking to a person the other day in the business, and I said, if you're giving a person 150 a day, legit, it has cost you 300 a week. Because I know you don't like this word, VAT, because the person must bring in 1,000 euro, and that's 135 euro, and then you take 20% off the 800, that brings you up to 300 a week. That's 15,000 just for one person for taxes alone. So you cannot do it. You cannot do it. When you're doing the figures, Neil, you can talk about it because they're in front of you.
150 cash in hand every day is 800 a week, on which no tax is paid. So if the tax were being paid on that, the gross income would probably be about 1,400 a week, wouldn't it?
1,600
a week.
About 1,600.
Well, maybe not that much. Like, you wouldn't be paying 50% tax on all of it, but
maybe about 14.
Yeah,
but like it's a joke. But I am looking, and I'm going to be.
So when you get phone calls from somebody because you're advertising for a barber, do they all look for cash?
Some don't want to work Saturday. That's the other side. They don't want to work a Saturday. So at the moment, I don't need anyone out this week because I just one girl is leaving out Saturday, and I've done it by myself. And after next week, then it's only done it by myself, and I will be looking for someone again after that because it's so quiet, you know, unbelievable. But like we're going to be open for 12 months. Now, there's two hairdressers, Neil, interested. There was two lads from Bangladesh interested. And a guy from Cork who lives in London, I believe he's a developer. But I would prefer to see a hairdresser to buy it and live up overhead and keep the place going.
Okay.
Because they could make a nice living out of the place.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am open. I am open. Somebody said, before I let you go,
says the Baldy barber is a great man, but if he accepted card or contactless payment, I'd go to him if he did, but he only accepts cash.
I have Revolut. So that person is wrong there now.
Okay, no, and it's good to know, because you get a younger clientele if you were taking tap and go.
Yes, but Neil, the bank will take 1,200 a year out of the business.
I know, but you see, there's a load of people don't have cash anymore.
Oh, I know that. My two daughters are the same, because if they're going out, I have to give them cash.
No, I'm just suggesting that maybe you're missing out on a bit of the market.
Yeah, I said to them, I said, all right, I'll get a card machine, but I will charge 18 euro for a card, because I'm not going to subsidise the bank.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And by the way, you're talking about the Hall Martin, 20 years. Well, I've been smoking 2 years before that on the 1st of May. And when Hall Martin was the Minister for Health, I was off at a function, and he said to me, you know, he says, there's a man here in the room, the Baldy barber, and he told me the best thing he ever did was to ban smoking out of his shop. And I'm only following his example.
Okay.
So there you are.
Okay,
now.
So the credit for the smoking ban.
I was ahead of me, Hall.
All right, okay, thanks for that. All right, Baldy, much obliged.
You're
take
great,
care.
Bye.
All right, cheers, all the best.
Easter.
And bye, everybody in Blackpool. The man behind the smoking ban was not Micheál Martin. It was the Baldy barber in Blackpool. Text 0868 104 106. Call's on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I got the Baldy barber, 16 euro for a dry cut. Somebody says I got my hair cut in Toker regularly for 12 euro. That is very, very cheap at 12 euro. Back to the phone lines we go. We get some more calls as well after 10. John, good morning. You got 3.5 minutes, so use it wisely. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. I listened to your interview, and well done with the city manager. And after that performance, Neil, I believed all the time along, and I still believe that we need a directly elected mayor who is elected from within us and will serve the people of Cork.
And we had a chance on that, and we voted no on Leaside. They voted yes in Limerick, we voted no.
Well, that was a mistake, I think, because otherwise, you see, all you have is an individual who will be moving on pretty shortly and will be replaced by another unelected individual, male or female, right? Who the public in the city, like, I mean, our city, have no say in who actually gets the job.
But forgive me now, a directly elected mayor would not replace the chief executive.
Well, he would if you give them, if you disbanded, you couldn't possibly have a directly elected mayor and a city manager then with executive powers going head to head. That would never work. So you get a directly elected mayor who has the powers then to run the city for the people, who can call in the guard, the commissioner over in Anglesey Street, dress him down and say, I want more police on the streets, I don't care how you get it, you get onto Minister for Justice, you get onto the Taoiseach, whatever, you speak for the people of Cork. So
don't you think that the Chief Super and those in authority are constantly on to headquarters looking for more staff? Don't you think that Drew Harris knows?
I believe that they're playing political football with this, and they won't drop the board. They're also playing political policing because it came across the other. The people in the city. Every time, Pat O'Connell referred to it, every time there's a protest, I counted 30 uniformed guards 3 weeks ago. There was three different. There was the Gaza, there was the Ukrainian crowd, there was the Irish Freedom Party, all the different groups. There was 30 uniformed guards, there was a public order unit and two vans around the corner, and there was undercover cops that I know to see from around the place.
Yeah, well, you know the reason for that. There has been in the past a lot of tension at some of these rallies. And there could be the potential for something to kick off. And then, of course, the criticism would be, why weren't there guards there to prevent somebody getting hurt?
Well, if you talk about tension, there's plenty of tension in town. No, I know people know we have two economies. We've got the day economy, you've got the night economy. Now, the night economy was being affected that people were afraid to go into town at night time now with what's going on inside there. Now, it is transferred to the day economy. I know people won't even go in during the day. So, I mean, you talk about stress on the streets. There's a real stress on the streets. When the people of Cork are no longer going to their own city, either day or night.
And how would a directly elected mayor solve everything? With more power, is it for, a five-year period, ultimate control?
Yeah, just like you have the mayors in the cities in America there. I mean, they have total control. They can call in the police commissioner. They can fire the police commissioner. That's the power they have. If the police commissioner isn't doing his job, or the local law enforcement, they will bring him in, dress him down, and if he continues to carry on the way or she, the way they're not performing, they will be sacked. But nobody loses their job here. Mm. And look, the state of the city inside there, I'll be honest with you, when I walk down Patrick Street, I feel there's only one word to sum up where I feel sad. Because I walked inside Norwich stores in the mid-70s, right? And that stage inside Patrick Street, you couldn't get an envelope into Patrick Street. Every single building was trading in Patrick Street.
Yeah, but we have online shopping now. You got DHL and Amazon vans all over the place. That's the world we live in now.
Yeah, but even so, if you took Pennies out of Patrick Street, the two best performing stores there at the moment are Pennies and Deals. But if you take on and introduce the Pennies, they're going to have a superstore there. But if Pennies decided to move from Patrick Street in the morning, very shortly after Patrick Street would resemble the set of a spaghetti western with the dust blowing up the streets.
Okay.
That's what's keeping the city going.
All right.
And listen, just one more thing before I go. Just on the hate speech, I see they're watering it down now. And Sinn Féin, of course, now have pulled back in it. They were supporting it all the time along. They saw the results in the referendum where the people battered all the parties, right? And now they're even more going back in it. The government are going to water it down. And rightly so, because it will affect your show and other talk shows and freedom of speech, criticism of politicians. That's what they were trying to do. We might still move to North Korea if it had come in its original
I'll
state.
Be putting that point and lots of others to Donegal O'Leary from Sinn Féin after 10. Thank you for now, John. Text 0868 104 106. The Neil
Bill Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Here we go again. People are saying Guinness, Diageo, putting up the price of a pint by 6 cents, except it won't be 6 cents. Sure, it won't, Neil, by the time you pay for it. No wonder pubs are closing and people are deserting the pubs in their droves. Yes, you're probably right. It'll be 6 cents from Diageo, and undoubtedly the publicans will have to put on another couple. It's not €5 to €5.50 for a pint of stout, Neil. It's €6 for stout in the city centre. Somebody else says, just to update you, Murphy's and Guinness in one Cork pub at the moment is €5.80, but in another, not too far from it, it's €6.20. No wonder people are drinking at home. I was talking about the guy who has to pay over €20,000 because his neighbour took him to court. The gist of this story was that the ball went into the neighbour's garden and he wouldn't give it back, and everything kicked off after that. So they're still around. My kid's ball went in next door. They knocked on the door and asked for the ball back, and she roared at them to get off her property or she'd call the guards. So I just shouted, give the kids their ball back. They roar at the kids if they touch their grass as well. Shouting at kids to get back over to your own side of the estate in 2023, it's absolutely unbelievable. Yes, it is, and it's very, very unneighbourly. What a plunker. If I had 20 grand every time I threw a ball back over the wall or the fence, I'd be loaded, says Eilish in County Waterford. So thanks for that. I mentioned also earlier on about a chap who was having an issue with, he says, the wife. His term, not mine. €130, he said, was way too much for the weekly shopping for two adults and two children. And I was saying at the time, are you insane? That is not a lot. Well, it is a lot of money, but it's not a lot when it comes to a weekly shop for two adults and two children. And I was interested to take the temperature, you guys. Oh my God, €130 a week for a full shop is a bargain. I mean, ours is anything from 150 to 200, depending on what we need. That's more like it. Yeah, absolutely. It would be closer to 180 to 200. There are five of us and our weekly spend is €190 minimum. It's mental, isn't it? We spend well over €200 a week on shopping for four kids and two adults. That man who texted you is living under a rock, including toiletries and cleaning stuff. It goes to €300 some weeks. It does vary each week, but I spend a lot as we have a growing family of children who are also heavily involved in sport. So some weeks, €300. He's living under a rock. Tell him go and do it himself the next time. He should actually do it the next time and he'll get a rude awakening. €130 for grocery shopping for two adults and two children is nothing nowadays. I get a shock too sometimes when I hear how much a few items actually cost. Well, in my case, it was two small bags, €72. Two adults and two children is at least 150 from Dunn's weekly shopping. We also add bread from Lidl every 2 days for the kids' lunch boxes, and that would be another €20 a week anyway. And just two more. A normal shop for us, two adults and two kids, is 130 in Aldi, another 40 in Supervalue, and another 40 for meat in the English market. The same shop last year would have roughly cost about €90 for Aldi and 25 for Supervalue. The prices in the market haven't changed. Well, fair play to the English market. So what would have been 90 last year in Aldi is now 130. Just with the shopping, I have two teenage girls and a hubby. My shopping comes in at 250 to 300 for a full week's shop. That could be without dishwasher tablets or washing tablets or detergent. This includes dinners, lunches and breakfast for the week. And that's with €35 off coupons every week. Well done to that lady who can do it for 130. He's deranged if he thinks that's expensive. Thank you for those. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Donna Colera next.
Call Neil now. 0818
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
As promised, Donna Colera, Cork Southside TD for Sinn Féin. And he joins me by WhatsApp. Donica, good morning. Just picking up. Good, good, good. Oh, can I just also say, for fear of people not knowing, it's snowing now across places across the city. Got text from the O'Mallow Road, White's Cross, Glasheen, Bandon. It's snowing now, and it's even snowing where I am. We weren't seeing that one coming. But we don't see a lot of things coming, Donica. Sure, we don't. The reversal of Sinn Féin with regards to the upcoming, maybe it won't be upcoming, hate bill. Why did you guys change your mind? Oh, it's because you got absolutely spanked in the two referendums, right?
Well, I suppose we have many virtues, Neil, but time travel is not one of them. And I suppose opposition has been the same since June, sort of last year. So it's certainly not connected to referendum, that's for sure.
No. That was in the Senate. That was a vote in the Senate. That might have happened last June, but if you rewind the clock a little bit further back to less than 12 months ago, you voted in favour of it in the Dáil.
Yeah, and look, I mean, look, I can explain that, but just to be very, very clear, the position of the party has been the same since last June. And I suppose we've made multiple statements, whether they were, I suppose, people were aware of them or not, or whether they were given enough attention by the media. I think there were multiple statements since last June making it very clear that we wouldn't be supporting the legislation. We voted in favour of amendments to scrap it. And there's a number of reasons for that. But I suppose in terms of the approach that we took, we recognise the fact that people who are from vulnerable groups need protection. People from the LGBT community, people from different backgrounds. We believe that they need protection. And the legislation, we wanted to give it a fair hearing. But we did, like right at the very first speech that we gave back in 2022, our spokesperson, Pat Daly, raised concerns in relation to it. And a number of the concerns.
Yeah, but you still, and all of your TDs, voted in favour of Helen McEntee's legislation last April. You may have had concerns, but you still voted in favour of it. What? Nothing has changed with regards to our proposal to make you now change their mind.
So our spokesperson, Pat Daly, right in that first speech, outlined some of our concerns. And some of our concerns included things like the fact that hatred wasn't defined, the fact that Section 10 was very broad, the fact that the test being used was what's called a demonstrative test rather than the motivational test, and the fact that it was being applied to public order. So what we did was we raised those concerns, we tabled a number of amendments. The ministers at the time, which was both variously Simon Harris and Helen McEntee, said that they'd take them away, they'd look at them, and they'd consider amendments. Now, that didn't transpire. We did. We allowed it to pass to the next stage on the basis that they said that they would commit to looking at amendments. But unfortunately, to be honest, they didn't take on board what we were saying, what other people in the opposition.
So if they weren't taking on board what you were concerned with at the time, why didn't you vote against it and stall it? Here's the problem people will have, that Sinn Féin come across as very wishy-washy, kind of out in the wind and making things up as they go along. Would this not be an example of that? You may say it has nothing to do with the referendum, but it would be smart for politicians to sit up and take notice of the public when they vote against something the government wants, and maybe you should be applauded for that. I don't know.
Look, I mean, the referendum, like, we've listened very clearly in relation to that. And when the people speak, we absolutely listen. We won't be rerunning any referendum. The people have spoken on that, and that is absolutely final. So in terms of listening to the people, we're listening to the people very clearly there. But this is not a position that was, you know, there was no question in our minds, anyway, at least, in relation to our position on the HG's legislation at the time.
So nobody has defined what the word hatred means, apart from Michael McDowell, who says that his definition of hatred is attacking a person because of who they are. Isn't that a good enough definition of hatred for you?
Yeah, that is a good definition. There's a good definition from the Irish Council of Civil Liberties, of instance, that is used internationally as well. But the fact that hatred isn't defined at all, and you can have a debate about what definition you might use, but the fact that it's not defined at all was a problem for us. And you're right, like, I mean, we did allow it to proceed. To be honest, did we give the government too much credit? Did we give them too much time and space? I think that that's probably fair. I think we were probably too patient with them. And then when, I suppose, they didn't move on the areas that we had concern in relation to, we voted against it last June, and it's been our position ever since then. So, and I suppose a number of things about that too. Like, I mean, I think an awful lot of time has now been given to this. And when you have a minister, Minister Harris and Minister McEntee, as they were, who are prioritising this over the fact that, like, in Cork, we're down something like 20 Gardaí since the start of the year. And we've been raising this consistently. We had that motion last year.
Okay.
Because we are not confident that the Minister for Justice is focusing on the right
things.
Are
you making the point there are you saying surely there are more important things that need fixing in Ireland than muzzling free speech or muzzling the media? Is that the point you're making?
I think the priority of the Minister for Justice should be in tackling the rise in theft and the issues like that in relation to crime, guard the presence. Like, you go to any community safety forum across Cork and you see people raising the issues, and the Gardaí, we have some fantastic Gardaí here in Cork, really excellent, right from leaf right down to grassroots. But they are saying, listen, we're doing our best, but we don't have enough men and women to get out there and do the job and to be patrolling our streets. And that is absolutely...
So you're saying just completely and utterly scrap this legislation? I mean, is that what you're saying, that
that is our position now? Yeah, that is our position now. Look, we gave it a fair hearing. We gave it lots of time. But it's our view now that at this stage, the legislation is at the end of the road. Enough time has been spent on it. They clearly haven't taken on board any of the concerns. If they want to address protections for vulnerable groups, there's other things that they could do in terms of the non-fatal offences against the Person Act or the Property Acts and different amendments that could be made about things like that. But to be honest, enough time has been spent on this legislation. We think it's at the end of the road. We think it should be scrapped, and you know, the Minister for Justice and the Taoiseach should focus, the would-be Taoiseach that will be in a fortnight's time, should now be turning their focus to the real issues that I think people are concerned about. And that's Gareth, and that's tackling.
That is just taking the temperature of the public then, isn't it? That's what
I think, to be fair, O'Neill, to be fair,
swinging
O'Neill
in the wind and just saying, you know, like, for instance, who's going to protect people?
To be
people
fair, O'Neill, how many conversations have you and me had now about Garda presence in Cork? I would say in over a dozen. And, you know, I think, to be fair, whatever else people say about me,
but it's been populist. No, but I'm saying that's just being populist. That's just being populist.
Let's look at the record now, Neil. How many times and for how long have I been raising the fact that we don't have enough Gardaí here in Cork and that Cork is constantly overlooked? I think now, in fairness, I have a very long track record.
What would Sinn Féin do then to fix that?
In terms of the recruitment and retention crisis?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the targets need to be increased. I think that an awful lot needs to be done in terms of freeing up Gardaí, who, in terms of, you know, getting them out from behind their desks and out onto the road. There are issues in terms of terms and conditions that need to be applied, and I think additional budget needs to be invested in the recruitment as well. But they've missed all their targets. They are way, way behind a target that they set that is far, far too low. Okay. And I do, like, I would emphasise as well, even within the numbers that are there, Cork always seems to do much less well than it should. Like, we get two or three Gardaí, at most four or five from each cohort. We're about 10% of the population of the state in this county. We only get about 1 or 2% of the Gardaí that come out of Templemore, and that simply isn't good enough.
Okay, but how would you answer the public who would say that if we have 800 or 900 Gardaí in the greater Cork area, city area, why can't we have a few walking the key streets in the city by day and by night like it used to be? Is that a fair, genuine criticism?
I think I lost you there for just 2 or 3 seconds.
What I get over and over again from people is that there are issues with admin and court time. I understand all that and shift patterns and what have you. But at least some of them could be on our streets walking Patrick Street or McCurtain Street or the Grand Parade or the North Mall. You know what I mean? South Mall. Seeing things and dealing with them and a presence on our streets. Surely, be to God, it's not too much to ask.
Well, sure, that's what we want, Neil. And I suppose I think, to be fair, like, yes, are there times that better could be done with the resources that they had? I'm sure there would be. But, like, I mean, I think the primary issue is that there's not enough staff. Like, the job has changed in recent years. You know, there are now specialist units looking into the protective services unit, which is responsible for sexual crimes. There's an awful lot more focus on drug crime and all that kind of stuff. More staff are needed than once were, but also more time is being taken up with administrative issues that, to be honest, could be done by civilian staff. So, like, what we want to achieve, like, the best deterrent, it's absolutely proven, the best deterrent to crime is a strong Garda presence on the streets. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
You're the justice spokesperson for the opposition, right?
I'm not, no, not anymore. No, that was about 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, so what are you now?
Social protection.
Okay, my apologies. I still thought you were doing justice. So the question I was going to ask you would have had something to do with maybe what you could have done if you were justice minister under the election of a Sinn Féin government. But that obviously is not a question for you. But what would be, say, for instance, would be section 10 of the bill, right? If you're scrapping it and you're saying it's time now to just forget about all of this, what about people of section 10, people of race, colour, nationality, religion, ethnic origin, gender, sexual characteristics, sexual orientation, and disability? Who's going to protect them from the online world?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I've acknowledged that the fact that people from vulnerable backgrounds need protection, I'm sure you'd agree with that too. There is some legislation in this area, the 1989 Act. It's probably not good enough, but what we are now saying is that the broad, all-catching nature of this legislation is too much. Yes, people need protection, but we would be concerned about the way that the legislation could be used to silence dissent. We're very conscious of that as Republicans in terms of the past and this state as well. But are there things that could be done with, for example, the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Person Act, in terms of putting in protections there, if people are planning attacks or planning offensive behaviour, and obviously if they follow through on them against people like that, could you make it so that it would be an aggravating factor in sentencing? I think you could, and different things like that.
What about people who possess material likely to incite violence or hatred against people? That could be somebody of colour, it could be immigrants. What about the same people possessing and distributing anti-gay matter, for instance, or making awful comments on air about an individual or a group of individuals because of their sexual orientation?
Yeah. Look, I mean, they're all the kind of issues that were being discussed in some of the areas that we had concern. And we're getting right down into the detail.
Well, Section 10 does seem to be the sticking point.
It is, because there is a number of differences between possessing and distributing. We might disapprove enormously and find it morally reprehensible that people might possess something, but if they have no intention to distribute it, there is a question as to whether that should be, in fact, criminalised. And the test that was being used as to whether somebody actually intends to distribute it went from what was previously the case in similar type offences of what is the motivation, what do they intend to do, why would they seek to distribute it, as to, you know, a test that is more to do with the fact that they in fact have it, which is a kind of...
Oh, I understand that. So test. It could potentially mean that somebody, because people do send videos around and funny, they would think they're funny memes or GIFs or what have you, and I get them. I would delete quite a number of them because I just think they're not for me. But if somebody's phone was seized where they're distributing material that's offensive, would it be a position that the Gardaí could also trace to whom that information was sent to and also prosecute the receiver?
I think I've lost you again there, Neil.
Okay, no, I'm just
making... Oh, no, I have you now. Yeah,
I'm just making a generalised point.
I got most of that. I think that is some of the concerns that people had in relation to it and, you know, how far reaching the test was. And I think the point has been made, you know, well, look, a high court judge isn't going to do something like that. But we can't be relying on...
Oh, so you'd end up you could end up in court defending yourself and hoping that the judge...
Yeah, and then you're down to the level of, okay, that's all fine if you have a good government and a good judge. But legislation needs to be robust enough to protect against a government that overreaches and judges who make poor judgments. So the legislation needs to be strong enough. And we felt it went too far in that regard. And we would have preferred the test being the more standard approach that had been taken of the motivational test. The fact, and it comes back to this again, the fact that hatred isn't defined is a problem. There are definitions that are possible. As you said, Michael McDougall instanced one, the ICCL have instanced another. That was a problem for us right from the outset. And you'd like that
it
is
wasn't
there
a problem from the outset. You had a Sinn Féin spokesperson Kenny at the time and spoke out in very, very much in favour of Rose Conway Walsh, the Sinn Féin Mayo TD, says, "We welcome the legislation that will follow. We absolutely need to get it right." So there was loads. Martin Kenny said his party have no difficulty in supporting this proposal. This was okay. I mean, it wasn't today or yesterday. It was maybe March of 2022 on the Dáil. So from 2022 until April of 2023, you were very much in favour of it. No problem supporting it. I'm just curious as to whether the referendums come along and everything's off.
Well, a couple of things there. The first thing is, if you look at the debates and you look within, I'd say, 2 or 3 minutes of the first speech that we made as this bill was passing through, that very issue whether hatred was a problem was defined, and we talked about our concerns in relation to that. And that speech by Pat Daly at the very first stage of the dial is there for all to see and outlines the concerns we had and the tests that we were measuring the government against and where we wanted to see changes.
On the basis of people's freedom of speech in
the
democracy.
This issue of the referendums, and listen, I like emphasise very clearly, the people have spoken, we absolutely accept that, we won't be revisiting that. But this doesn't influence our position that we took in June of last year one bit, because obviously it couldn't have.
Okay. Let me get some thoughts on this from members of the public and those that are listening. Thank you as always, Donegal O'Leary TD, Sinn Féin, Cork South Central. My apologies, no longer a justice spokesperson. Happy to correct that. Text 0868 104 106. Your thoughts are welcome.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
When Simon Harris was announced as the new leader of Fine Gael and soon to be our next Taoiseach, I did read somewhere where he was saying that there would not be, and he wasn't going to proceed with the hate bill legislation. And then within a matter of a day or two, of course, we were hearing, well, that's not altogether accurate, but that will have to be amended. Sinn Féin coming out this morning with Donal Cleary saying that it should be completely and utterly scrapped. Now, you could say, kind of like almost sarcastically, that this is just taking the temperature of the public after the referendum and what have you. But also, when you hear of, oh, well, we're going to amend it, we're going to do this, that and the other, is this the last sting of a dying wasp and that it just will be shelved and be forgotten about? Donal Cleary says there are more important things to be dealing with, and there's certainly more important issues that need fixing in Ireland, perhaps, than this. Unless you're a minority group, of course, that deems to need protection under this. Somebody who's been quite vocal about it in the recent past is Eddie Hobbs, and he joins me by WhatsApp. Eddie, good morning. So with Sinn Féin coming out and saying, scrap it, and the government saying, we're going to amend it, as the Mirror says this morning, there's not much love for it, so it probably will just be abandoned, right?
Well, it looks that way. Politics has changed dramatically since the 8th of March, because the entire political establishment, including Sinn Féin, really had their ass handed to them on a plate by the Irish people. They completely misread the mood of the people, and they completely got wrong the actual result on the poll itself, which was dramatically against the entire position of the political establishment, with some exceptions like independents and two. So I think what's happened now is that I think it was a contributory factor into Leo Varadkar, the apostate, resigning his position. And I think it's had a chilling effect on the political establishment itself. And what you're seeing now is a political assessment saying, well, where did this bill come from first day, and who did it serve, and what was its origin? And if we just let it die from dust on the shelf, in other words, we won't pronounce it dead because that would be a humiliation, we'll just let it die away and talk about other things. I think that's the political calculus that's going on from everybody that was on the wrong side of the vote on the eighth of March. Yeah. I think that's the position, Neil.
Yeah, I'm wondering, would you sum it up by saying that people aren't maybe as woke or up for as much dramatic change as maybe politicians might think? Is it?
Well, I think what was remarkable about the events of the 8th of March was that a large proportion of the commentariat and mainstream media were pushing for yes. All the political parties were, a few weren't, and a campaign led by Michael McDowell and then barrister Una McGurk and a few like that. I mean, she did an 11-minute video. It had about 250,000 views, which is dramatic. I think people were engaged elsewhere. They were getting their information largely elsewhere, and they smelt the rat and didn't like the wording, didn't like the redefinition of Irish family, and okay. That's what it boiled down to.
And what should people not like about the proposed hate speech legislation, particularly Section 10, where people of race... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, Neil. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure, look, anybody who's read the bill, and I'd urge anybody to read it, it's on the Oireachtas website. It's a pretty quick read, you know, and even a layperson reading it can see this is a big rat of a bill, and effectively what it does is that it, as we all know, it doesn't define hatred, so that's a huge problem. But the real issue that it creates is that it puts the onus of being innocent on the person accused, and the accusation can be made by somebody can accuse you of an offence under this particular bill. A Garda then will have to look at it. The Gardaí can then go and get a bench warrant from a district court and can appear at your home and can force entry if required and take all of your devices, including your laptop and mobile phone, including those of your children, and any content on it that's deemed to be potentially hateful to a named, and there's 10 different minorities here, could mean that you get prosecuted. Now, I think that in reality, the Irish courts would take a very dim view of this legislation. I think it's very badly crafted. But the problem is that I think that's the intention, is to send a deep chill through Irish discourse. That's its intention.
And there are two sections. One is hate crime, which could be physical and assault, couldn't it? Leading to somebody's safety.
Yes, it could. Yeah.
The other is hate speech and the things that we say either in person or online. It's probably well overdue that is looked at online, because it is a vicious, nasty, toxic sewer world a lot of the time. And manners need to be put on people so that they can't think that they have the anonymity as keyboard thugs to go around saying and doing whatever they please.
Well, I think that's a huge societal issue, anonymous posting on any kind of platform.
Well, not always anonymous. So
yeah, but a lot of the time it is, you know, and that people are prepared to say things but not put their name or balance sheet behind what they're saying online, which is unfortunately toxic. But the issue we have here is that we already know that there is legislation in place dealing with hate crime from, you know, there's four different acts that flow into this area. Yes, you could argue there's bits of this that could improve it. But the problem that it's creating here is completely over the top. And it's clearly going to capture an awful lot of people that aren't of the ilk you've just described.
How would they be captured? Give me examples of that.
Okay, so I hear you saying something that I didn't like, that I deem to be offensive to my particular minority, and I make a complaint against you. The Gardaí say, well, let's go and get a bench warrant and go into your home and look at your devices and anything on your devices we think could be, even though that may not be your intent, it's up to you to prove it's not your intent, to use that to create hate towards a named minority could become a matter for prosecution. That's the issue.
Okay. So I understand that. And a lot of that risk comes with, say, for instance, the particular job that I do. If I allow debate where people are given an opportunity to air their views and try and moderate it or balance it as best I can. If somebody, and a typical of that example of that could be maybe issues involving migration and immigration and things like that, that anybody could take offence to something that was on air or a contributor to a radio programme or a columnist in a newspaper, is it?
Yeah, but the defences under the bill as it's written are extremely thin. So you're guilty until you prove your innocence. No, you have to prove that it was a genuine contribution to the arts, to politics, to science or religion, or it's part of an academic engagement or debate in the university. You have the defence of absolute privilege, which is under the Defamation Act. It's the same thing that the communication that you were making or sending to somebody was in a particular bubble.
We do have defamation laws for media, but I don't think that many people actually proceed in defamation against members of the public for something they might say to them, you know what I mean? But it does happen in a media world. But would an example of that be for instance, somebody who might have a reasonable point of view with regards to being trans critical?
Well, you see, this is the current hot potato of issue. It's extremely important, very, very important matter to a certain minority in the population, and they have very, very strong views about it, which have to be respected. The problem here is we're trying to we become such a rules-based society, especially in the last 20 years. It's the biggest growth industry regulation. We want to regulate our problems out of existence. And when you create so many rules and more rules on more rules, and it's not just in this area, if I could just make the point, Neil, it's in the professions as well. The professions are completely regulated out the wazoo. There's so many, just rules upon rules and bureaucracy growing. So the issue here is, how do we deal with the underlying problem? And obviously, I mean, there seems to be the fingerprints of gender identity lobby here, which is understandable, because they feel very vexed about it. But I think that the bill taken in the round is entirely over the top. And it's why it's drawn such international condemnation as well.
It hasn't drawn. It hasn't, though. I mean, we're pretty much... Well, Dr. Seamus Taylor of Maynooth University says, we are the laggards of Europe. We're the last to legislate in this area. Scotland just passed their hate speech bill.
Yeah, it depends on the detail. We've gone one step further. We've gone one step further. We're making thought itself a crime. Not an action. Not that you got the stuff and you broadcast it, but that you have the stuff on your devices and you could use it. That's the issue. And then you have to prove you're innocent. So what you're generating here is a surveillance and snitch society, which is the very essence, if you look at all the works in the past of people like Hannah Arendt and so on. That's the essence of a totalitarian society, that we actually imprison ourselves and we're watching what we're all doing and we're reporting on ourselves. That's not the Irish way.
Does free speech allow people to be, because it's free speech, not in the American sense now, which is very, very broad. Does it include being insulting, demeaning, argumentative, racist? Is that all it depends. Okay under the term free speech?
Well, you see, because we don't know. We know what free speech is, but we don't know what hate is because it's not defined in the Act.
A hate could be something that would put another person at risk.
It will come down to the judgment of a justice of the courts. That's what it would come down to, because it's not defined in the Act. And I think there's all sorts of problems there, by the way.
So that could lead to chaos.
There would be with the judiciary. Yeah. Absolute chaos, yeah. And it's so very, very badly designed. I don't think it's capable of being tweaked. I think it needs to be just binned. And I think it politically will be. But that's not the interesting question for me. The real interesting question, Neil, is why did we go as far as we were prepared to go with this bill? Why? What was the driver? And is it interconnected with other matters? That's the real outstanding question.
Like what?
And we do know, I know you don't want to get into it, but we do know that coming hot on the heels of this is the document coming in May from the World Health Organization, which has in it a requirement of member states to clamp down on anything it regards as misinformation or disinformation, in other words, counter science. And there it is again. There is more evidence of an attempt to silence people, and we silence ourselves by the words we use and our own policing of those words.
It's a very dangerous place to go. Is that something coming down the track that could prosecute somebody that would not be a fan of vaccination, for instance?
Well, it's not just about vaccination. It's about, if the World Health Organization have the authority unilaterally to declare anything it decides as a pandemic and lockdown and order a lockdown on countries, I mean, that's something, obviously, that needs very, very careful attention. But the problem is, because of the overhang of COVID-19 and everything that happened during that period, there's a real nervousness amongst actually engaging with this material, which is why on the 25th of April in the Silver Springs Hotel at 7 p.m, I'll be holding a public meeting called Breaking the Silence, which is really just to get into the detail of all of this, as well as deal, if it's still knocking around, deal with the hate speech bill, because they're interconnected matters. And we have to be careful here that the detail is publicly discussed, especially if large parts of the mainstream media aren't prepared to discuss it.
Okay, by the way, were you against lockdown personally?
No, I went along with the flow at the time. I had my moment of Pauline conversion several months into it. But at the time, you know, I went along. I thought it was the right thing to do. It seemed to be the right thing to do based on the information that's there. But I'm 3 years later, detailed study of the area, and I think that the whole thing was very, very badly orchestrated and administrated. And there are forces behind it. I mean, commercial forces behind it that people need to understand. And the World Health Organization is basically captive to those forces. I mean, €1
and five
comes from the Gates. €1 and 5 comes from the Gates Foundation, you know, which is one of the largest investors in the pharmaceutical industry in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just one of the facts that people don't know. And the chief scientific officer of the WHO is Sir Jeremy Farrar of the Wellcome Trust, which is a €50 billion pot of money that goes into these type of investments.
All of those companies that you're mentioning, right? Because of all of the pharmaceuticals that they created, saved lives over decades and decades and decades, and kept families alive and loved ones at home.
Look, listen, I'm vaccinated as well, by the way, and including COVID vaccinations. You won't find me arguing that point, which the point that needs to be argued is what are the collateral impacts of the of these emergency use drugs on the human immune system. I mean, and like all of that needs to be closely examined. And I'm just simply saying we need to do it in a rational and reasonable way. I don't think getting into binary arguments about are you vaccinated or not vaccinated really is very helpful. But what I do think is that there is there are strong arguments that improvements in engineering, water purity, quality, general nutrition, and especially loading up on things like vitamin D when it comes to coronaviruses, okay. Yeah. Have a far bigger impact on our defences than taking emergency use drugs.
It's you mentioned the World Health Organization. I didn't know. So it's just, but like, yeah. Just getting back to hate speech then. Do you believe, say, yeah. for instance, that there is enough legislation at the moment for somebody of colour, a black lad on a bus going home, and a group of others call him the N-word or start giving him hassle or start vidding him and sharing it online? That clearly is a hate crime. Is there legislation already in place that deals with that?
Well, it can be applied. Unfortunately, you know, I'm not expert on each of the individual 400 underlying pieces of legislation. I am somewhat expert on the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Persons Act of 1997, which is one of them. But there is a prohibition of Incitement to Hatred Act as well of 1989. Clearly, the legislators took the view that these things need further legislation. But I actually think that the route to sorting this out is to sort it out ourselves within society. We shouldn't simply tolerate a black person on a public transport being abused in that way. Yeah. You know, the people there need to do something about it on the spot and not suggest that, oh, we need to go down through the courts and get the Gardaí involved and all of the rest of it. I mean, obviously that needs to happen in extreme circumstances.
I always tend to think that laws do tend to put manners on people, not everybody, but that if you didn't have laws, you'd have even more chaos, that's all.
No, we do, but we have a lot of them, and I think this was a complete overkill,
okay.
Simply because we were making thought itself a crime. If it had been somewhat lighter, I think it wouldn't now be potentially facing its death, you know, because of the events of the 8th of March, and because it's an election year, I think the political establishment is extremely nervous about what the public reaction would be to this if it came in and it started to be, shall we say, mishandled in a kind of a snitch and surveillance type society took hold.
God knows what kind of knocks on the doors.
That would create all sorts of problems. Yeah.
God knows what kind of knocks on the doors people would get. You would call it, as you say, the introduction of thought crime. So Silver Springs Hotel then on the 25th, is that open to the public?
It is open to the public, yeah, and it's non-political. When we're just dealing with two issues, one is the World Health Organization stuff, and this, if it's still knocking around. But it's called Break the Silence, and it's really about what's going on underneath the changes at the World Health Organization and what we need to be aware of, because most people are blissfully unaware of it.
Okay, and if there was hate speech legislation in place right now, would that public meeting be a risky thing for you to do?
It probably would. I think anything was potentially risky because your defences are very thin.
Okay.
You'd have to be able to say that it was for art, which you couldn't say. For some politics, well, it's non-political. Is it scientific? No, I'm not a scientist. Is it religion? Well, no, I'm not a priest.
So is it, if it's open to the public, do the people just rock up on Silver Springs on the evening of the 25th?
Yes, it is. It's open to the public. It's in the convention centre, and that's the plan. And everybody is welcome.
What time?
But it's non-political, and it's just about those two issues.
What time is it at?
It's at 7 o'clock in the evening.
And who's going to be speaking?
I'll be speaking, and we'll be speaking in detail about what's going on, and we'll have a Q&A session. It shouldn't last too long, and there'll be lots of information, links and so on, available for people that want to know more about this. And if they want to learn anything a little bit more about it in the meantime, I've been issuing TikToks on it for the last number of months,
yes,
just to wake people
those.
Up to
I've
what's
been
going
following
on.
Those. Thanks, yeah. Eddie. Good to catch up. Eddie Hobbs will be in Silver Springs on the 25th of April, 7 p.m. All are welcome. Public meeting, Silver Springs Hotel. Text 0868 104 106. Calls on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show
and
on Red FM.
Get involved in the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. I got about 3.5 minutes. 3.5 minutes, Morris. Use it wisely. Go ahead.
Hi, Neil. No, look, I actually rang Donna Colley's office a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not a Sinn Féin supporter, and I have to say, his secretary did listen to me post about the referendums, and I did speak to her about the hate speech, and I just felt that it's going to control a lot of things that happen in Ireland in the next 10 to 15 years if it went ahead. And look, I wouldn't be a Sinn Féin supporter at all, Neil, but I have to give him credit here, like, he's after listening to what people are telling him. And whether he kind of circumvents it by saying that they didn't vote for this or vote for that. They're listening to people now that are telling them, just can't go ahead. It's as simple as that. Mm. You know? It's too controlling, Neil. Like a simple thing there. The government are giving out a lot of grants at the moment. And in order to get grants for infrastructure, we say, in communities, like, you have to have special toilets and you have to have all sorts of things. I was at a sporting event there last October. My wife, my son was playing in a hurling game up the country. And at halftime, I went down to use the toilet. And there was a crowd, big, huge crowd in the toilet. And, like, it was a school game, Neil. So, like, I went up to use the toilet and there was two teachers in there controlling it because the toilets were gender neutral. So I'm a 55-year-old man, Neil, and I was expected to go in and use the toilet with a 12 and 13-year-old girl or 12 or 13-year-old boy, you know? My wife actually went in and used
you,
it.
You, in any public toilet, if you were in the loo, say a hotel toilet, there's a potential for you to be at a urinal with a 12-year-old boy.
No, but these toilets, Neil, because the queue was so large and the queue was inside in the toilet, that the toilets were for everyone. So there was school-going children queuing up inside in the toilet.
Okay, but so you've got an uncomfortable vibe because there are young girls in there. I get that. I would be the very same. If you were to say that under hate speech legislation, would you then be prosecuted for saying that? If somebody But hold on a second. Somebody takes offence. Say, for instance, if it was some child that was going through hormonal change because they no longer wanted to be female or male, for instance, and that would involve, say, for instance, you could have transsexual people or people who are trans or going through change. Would you be prosecuted because you say you do not wish to wear to share a bathroom with a person?
I wouldn't think so. My whole point about, like,
why do you think not? That would be deemed, wouldn't it, to be hatred to a minority or to a group of individuals that need protecting against hate speech?
No, but look, Neil, I presume that if I was outside the toilet and there was a trans woman going in there who just identifies as a woman, and I had an 8-year-old daughter and she was going into the same toilet, I certainly wouldn't allow that happen. And to be convicted of a crime for doing something like that would really, really be sending us back to the dark ages.
But say a woman in a female bathroom who might say something to a trans woman, man who was now presenting as female or woman, says something critical to that person, that would be hate speech, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it wouldn't, because you'd have to delve in. What's trans, Neil? Like, there's all different versions of trans. Like, for years, we were led to believe that trans was somebody that actually went through the full process of having an operation. Now, people are kind of, like, there's non-binary, there's men, there's women.
You can just identify. You don't have to have surgery. Yeah, absolutely.
And you're actually right, before I go, because there was a darts match over the weekend in England, and a trans woman won it, who is a man by nature.
Yeah.
So two women pulled out of the tournament. Like, would they be?
I saw something. Possibly. I saw it recently also in a pool tournament, I think. Was it a pool tournament also I saw it in?
A pool tournament as well, yeah.
Okay.
Before I go, Neil, like for weeks there, we were told about durable relationships and they couldn't release the Attorney General's advice, right? But yet, Helen McAtee was all over the weekend telling us that the Attorney General has given out the advice on here and he can't define that either.
Okay. So, it's all about the vagueness of it all yet again. Thank you for that, Maurice. Text 0868 104 106, back after 11. The Neil
Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And indeed, a conversation with Donal O'Leary this morning prompted Kenneth to send me a screen grab of an Irish Times article. I didn't see it in time to put it to Donal O'Leary, but this is the headline, and it is from the 20th day of February 2024. It says, Sinn Féin promises to rerun referendums on care and the family if they fail, and they would do it if they were returned to government. That is pretty much what, when you sum up the words of Mary Lou MacDonald in the article, it says, speaking at the launch of the party's campaign for a yes-yes vote in the referendums, Mary Lou MacDonald sharply criticised the wording and the timing of the referendum, but still urged a dual vote yes and yes. Should the referendums fail, the question would be put, the question we would put would be the wording from the Citizens' Assembly. She says, we would return to the Citizens' Assembly. That's what should be happening now. And if this is not successful, that's what we would bring. As in, back to the Citizens' Assembly, reword it, and run the two referendums again. So that's why you have a headline in the Times saying Sinn Féin promises to rerun the referendums on care and the referendum on the family if they fail. I got the distinct impression from Donal O'Leary before 11 that that would not be happening. It's done and dusted. On the hate speech laws being pushed by government, you should listen to Lorcan Price, an Irish barrister for human rights in Europe. He's very interesting, says Anthony. Okay, let's see if we can chat with him. This hate speech, if it's pushed through, will cause court cases every hour because people will abuse it. It's a European directive and Europe tells the government what to do daily anyway. We already have hate law, so just upgrade it. Another one. I had a canvasser for Sinn Féin last night. I told her, not a hope, especially as Sinn Féin voted yes in the hate speech. And in this case, it was Tommy Gould. She actually turned around to me and said, what hate speech? What are you on about? This was a canvasser for Sinn Féin. I told her he shouldn't be sending her around to canvass on behalf of Tommy Gould when she doesn't know what she's canvassing for. It sums up Sinn Féin, really, thinking we're all fools and their canvassers are clueless, says Patricia. Another one here. Sinn Féin are jumping ship. The truth is out. They lost the support of the people and now they should feck off. Okay. Can you ask Donica why there is a list of Sinn Féin TDs that voted for the hate speech bill during the rounds? Yeah, but they changed their mind, and he said. Can you ask him if Sinn Féin get into government, will they hold the referendum on water? Sinn Féin are nothing more than the sidestep masters in action, says somebody else. I wonder, would you ask Sinn Féin if they believe in democracy and rewarding people for hard work? If they believe in democracy, then what is his opinion on the leader having a job for life, like Putin or Kim Jong-un? Thank you for that. Hi, you could have an extra 1,000 Gardaí on the streets and it wouldn't do anything until there is proper punishment meted out and more prison space is created. You know, there's a lot to be said for that, isn't there? When you sometimes look at the sentencing or lack of it handing down in the courts. Sinn Féin are the same as the rest of the parties. That bloke Yvonne said Sinn Féin would not do another referendum. But, again, this is referencing the Irish Times article, Mary Lou MacDonald has already said that she would rerun the referendums if and when they got into power if they weren't voted yes, yes. Well, they weren't. They were voted no, no. Back to the phone lines we go. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Thank you for waiting. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, look, Neil, I would say thank you too, because you take quite a novel approach, and I appreciated during the last referendum that you threw this open to callers across all spectrums and were able to give their point of view. And one of the things we're lacking here, and which is chilling about the hate speech bill, is we wouldn't be able to have these kind of conversations. We would be subject to an awful lot of control. And
yeah, well, I would be anyway, by virtue of the conversations that I allow, I suppose. I'd have lots and lots of court cases against me, I would imagine.
You know, again, we don't know what the definition is. So hate speech is wide open. And I was talking there briefly to your producer. I was saying, well, you know, what if I said somebody was a pain? I mean, we already have bullying and harassment, very strong protections around that. And I know that the politicians are, you know, fair fodder for...
That wouldn't be hate speech. What possibly would be hate speech if you stop somebody on the street that didn't have the same colour as you are, and you said, why don't you go back to your own effing country, you sponger? That would be hate speech.
But how do you know that? What definition or what court decided that, or who gave you that definition? Neil, to be fair, where is the definition?
Well, common sense would dictate in that case.
Again, we had Michael McDowell telling us that the courts would decide what a durable relationship is, or durable relationships. So it was in the plural. But in terms of the hate speech, again, it's entirely up to the context and the courts to decide. And what they could decide could have a very chilling effect. But, you know, I was interested because on X this morning, there was Luna Lebone from the ICCL that...
Irish Council for Civil Liberties.
Yeah. She tweeted that the hate speech bill had to go through and that no amendments could be made to it. Now, I think that, number one, I don't recall, even though it's in the programme for government, I don't recall it being a high on a priority list in 2020 for the Irish people.
No, it wasn't.
So I think, Eddie Hobbs is right in saying, I see people now who are trying to get their heads around, where did this originate from? We've seen it in Scotland and we've seen it in Canada. And I always think that Ireland is a very, it's a country for a testing ground. You know, it's kind of often used, and it's very easily manipulated, and a lot of funds can be thrown at it. And we can see the massive funding of NGOs, the lobbying groups. They have huge power in terms of they get the ear of the government. We have to.
So it's
clear.
A minority who are imposing and dictating on the majority. You think, is it a kind
of? I think, you know, money talks. You know, money really can get you.
Well, I don't know how money can talk where you're protecting people from hateful speech about them.
No, but if you have funded NGOs who have all of this money that they can spend the time lobbying, so they're paid to do this, as opposed to I'm involved in so many voluntary efforts and, we don't get a penny for it. We're all paying our taxes and working full time and trying to raise our families. But if you are a funded NGO, and we saw the billion or whatever, was it 6 billion? I don't have the figures right to hand now because I didn't expect I'd be talking.
Okay, well, go ahead. What questions do you want to ask?
But if what you're saying, like what I'm saying is that if you have a job, a paid job where you spend your day lobbying and you get the opportunity to meet ministers, to meet the government, which is our cabinet, and you get to meet with them and push your agenda and push it and push it and push it, of course you're going to get places. And also where, again, I also believe that we have really lost our sovereignty in this country. And we, as Sean Kelly, MEP, pointed out, 70% of our laws are coming from Europe. So is there, there's a push there, you know, centralisation of control.
So this type different. Of society, and you said it in your original text, is a totalitarian society where our phones and our computers could be seized off us. You could get a knock at the door at 6 a.m. with guards outside with a search warrant for how you think and feel about things.
Yes, you were prosecuted in England for praying in your head. Luckily now they won their case, but you can,
there's the case that's rattling on in the UK at the moment, and I'm not going to mention anybody's names, but there was an individual who said that he hated an English politician so much, she happened to be a black opposition politician, that he
Diane
would like...
Diane Abbott, yeah. I think it was Diane Abbott she was referring to, but she also then was out on suspension because of comments that she made. So look, I think...
But you can't go so far as to say that you would wish somebody dead. You just can't.
Well, you know, we all have to take responsibility. And we also have to realise that sometimes we get very heated and we can say things that are and we must apologise for those things. We're all human, so none of us are
without... that's the kind of hate speech, really, that you do need very, very strong laws against.
Well, you have, bullying and harassment. I mean, you know, this, again, hate speech, it's not defined. It's not okay.
And just finally, because you also mentioned the power of the European Union about telling us what to do, and that includes, you're saying in your text, migration, is it? And how that also impacts on our sovereignty. But yet we all have come from somewhere. You know, if you trace back hundreds of years, my family originally came from France, for God's sake. So we're all of somewhere else.
Well, there's legal, there's the legal path, and then there's, this country has been absolutely fantastic in terms of offering refuge for genuine refugees. Don't make a mistake. I mean, my father looked after the Hungarian refugees, those who came down from the north, those who, I remember giving my beautiful doll to the Vietnamese boat people when they came. We have extended refuge to.
Do you believe we can't do any more? Is that the case?
At the moment, every European country is facing this, and America.
Okay, I'm losing you now, unfortunately, Mary. So I'm not hearing what you want to say. I lost all of that. There's one aspect about whether we're losing. Are you still there? No, not happening for me. Apologies for that. If it improves, I'll come back to it. I'll move on to the next call. Bridget, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
Okay, we're chatting about the hate speech legislation. It looks as if it could well be just buried, you know, put in a room and the door locked on it. But your thoughts?
Well, hopefully. But I think given that this thing seems to be rolled out in a few other countries, they'll probably have another bite of that apple. Like, the basis of it is all wrong. And Neil, I'm 25 years in healthcare and I do risk assessments every single day. And like, the fact of the matter is it's a balance of risk issue. And we have legislation for hate speech. We do. And maybe that needs to be slightly toughened up. But the powers that are given in this new proposed legislation, or the versions of it that have already gone through in the likes of Canada and everything else, like, a guard can, based on an anonymous tip, can come into your home, can take your mobile phone, can take your devices, can look at private messages.
I think that person who's making this anonymous tip would have to have some kind of evidence or copies of material likely to be a hate speech crime or a written crime. You know,
I'm sure you viewed it, Neil, as I have. The way the legislation is written, that protection is not there for people. And second to that, I'd say, this hate speech legislation is coming in the age of AI. Now, if that's not a scary thought to every man, woman and child, I don't know what is. Because I see, my kids love to show me things and I'll be like, well, Elon Musk said that or so-and-so said that. And they're like, and it wasn't him at all. But you would never know. So, and the software.
Well, actually, that's a very good point.
The software is there. Like, my kids love to make things. They're like 12 and 13,
that's,
and they can make things
point.
On a computer
AI,
and show
really,
it to me.
AI would drive a coach and horses through this because people would be able to manipulate anything, including your whole physical body and your speech.
Absolutely, but it can also, there's also mechanisms to go in and put stuff on your phone. I think it'll be abused no end. But the fact of the matter is it is massive government overreach. There's three things about it. Massive government overreach. Nobody asked for it. Nobody but the NGOs, which are the government's echo chamber, because they fund them and they created them and whatever else, right?
Why is everybody going on about non-government organisations who are funded by the state and do an awful lot of good work?
First of all, Neil, what would be interesting, maybe even for yourself, take a look at it.
A lot of them are charities.
Yeah, but it's easy to become a charity. But that just means you're not for profit, essentially, right? But here's the thing, Neil. We had lots of them before. Now we have thousands of them, right? And a lot of them are highly political. They have no base within society, within ordinary people. The National Women's Council is an example. They who knows who's a member of that? They're not for all women, right? And they have a hugely influential role. And the problem is they've taken away, using them as an example, ordinary people's voice. Because
how can you even say that they've taken away ordinary people's voices.
I'll tell you why.
The very people that they're representing are all women.
Well, who knows who their membership is? They won't say. I don't know anyone who's a member of them. They don't have public membership. You can't just become a member. So, I'll tell you why, Neil. Because in the last referendum, the government should have gone and asked, we should have asked bloody women. They definitely should have asked mothers, right? And instead, they asked the National Women's Council. So that was their
decision
to get their opinion.
They have loads, loads of people.
1 second, Neil. Whenever they had to defend the fact that this might be what people wanted, they referred, in terms of the mother-woman part, they referred to the National Women's Council. Okay?
Yeah, because so they represent... They would need to get the temperature.
No, they don't. Neil, you asked me what the problem was, and that's the crux of it. And this would be worth actually doing maybe another show on. They don't represent... The National Women's Council, as an example, they do not represent women. They do not have public anybody joined. They don't have thousands of members. But can I come back to the hate speech bill? There's three problems, Neil. I mentioned risk assessment, right? There's no zero-sum game here. Yes, you do need to protect people from vile things being said to them or misrepresentation. Mm. But we do have legislation, possibly that needs to be toughened.
Okay.
But you have to get the balance right between massive government overreach and invasion of privacy and most importantly, the suppression of free thinking. If you suppress language, if you control language, right, then you'll control thought, you'll control discussion, you'll get rid of dissent. Like, what kind of debate would we have had in the last referendum, Neil? And you did a brilliant job on that.
That's done now.
What would we have had?
Yeah.
No. I know, but what kind of debate would we have had with that legislation in play?
Yeah, but...
Where would talk radio go?
So is this okay then? Because there's already legislation that protects people with, people of race or colour or religion or gender or...
There's fairly robust
sexual
legislation,
orientation.
Neil, in this country.
There's enough.
Neil, there's fairly robust. You could argue it could be toughened, but it's fairly robust. But the problem with the legislation, like everything else, is the implementation and the sentencing.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And until they fix that, they can stop doing this because, like, and here's the other thing about the hate speech bill. Would you trust this government or any other government to decide what is acceptable speech and what's hate speech?
I think the worry is that there could be an awful lot of chaos and our courts would be overrun and an awful lot of Garda time. People complain about lack of Gardaí, but for every crime that a Garda actually comes across and makes an arrest or charges somebody with, there's a huge amount of time then involved in getting that to court. It's not as if they just can rock in with a biro and a blank piece of paper. Like, they have to do, and so that's eating them into an existing amount of a finite amount of Garda time as it is.
I would worry. For a hard fact, you'll have a boundary issue with your neighbour, and next thing in the guard will be there saying, "I heard you called him a such and such."
Okay, well,
the problem with this is it would be a problem if you had
a boundary issue with your neighbour and your neighbour had a different colour to your skin to you, and you called them a nasty name. Then you've got a guard
this hate speech isn't limited to, you know yourself with discrimination, there's a 9 criteria. The hate speech is not limited to that, right? So
it's race, colour, nationality, religion, national or ethnic origin, descent, gender, sex.
That's our current discrimination 9 criteria, but proposed hate speech is not limited to that. So someone can consider your opinion on something an affront to them, and we experience that all the time in cancel culture, and they're just going to, and this would be a legislating for that.
Okay.
So it would be a massive invasion of privacy, a big dent to free speech, and also give government powers that no government should ever have, and that's to control discussion and debate countrywide.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you, Bridget. I lost Mary, but I've got about 30 seconds, Mary, just to finish. You were making a point about EU migration. So would you mind making that as quickly as you can?
Yeah, I said that the Irish people, one thing about the Irish people, they can see things for what they are. And we saw that with the last vote. So the same with EU migration. There's and the government, and Simon Harris started saying last week about what's unvetted. I'm unvetted. I mean, this was really, again, an affront to our intelligence. We have no problem with legal migration, people coming to work in this country. We have freedom of movement within the EU, legal freedom of movement. Then you have genuine refugees who are fleeing persecution, you know, who could be killed for their beliefs. In fact, in 2005, I helped 2 Ukrainian doctors get asylum here in Ireland because they were fleeing persecution for uncovering a terrible, terrible situation in the Ukraine. And I don't think we have time to go into it now, but I certainly would talk about it. So we have absolutely no problem helping genuine people.
You're talking about, say, for instance, unvetted international protection order males without any kind of criminal checks coming into Ireland having torn up their paperwork, is it?
Look, I talked to a mother about 2 weeks ago, and her daughter, only for somebody coming along, would have been probably raped. And she went to the powers about it, and she was getting nowhere. And this is a street, and I have a daughter myself.
But what's that got? I know that. And that's shocking.
You talked about unvetted. We don't know from Adam about people coming into the country. If I wanted to go to Australia in the morning, which thousands of our Irish are going there, I wouldn't get in there. I wouldn't get in there unless I went through all the strict procedures and protocols and everything. So, you know, maybe we need clearance centres or something, but you have to think in terms of safety. We have witnessed things in this country that we didn't think we'd ever see in our lifetime, really. I mean, when it came to a child being stabbed and a girl out from a run. No. These are they are crimes, I mean, that we would never have thought.
With the movement of people, right, and the world now becoming much more accessible to all, you're going to have a lot more people in courts who don't have Indigenous Irish names. That's just normal. That happens everywhere.
But it doesn't mean that
the courts are overrun with people who came here, say, in the last 5 years under international protection orders or asylum seekers or refugees.
There's a lot of work being done on correlations between crime and
migration
and migration. Okay. So look, that work is in flow. But I know that, you know, I love my country. I absolutely love my country. I can't see my children being here going forward. Okay. I think the country is going to be unrecognisable in 5 years' time. I paid my taxes. I'm an upstanding citizen. I want to be, you know, we have a Christian country, love of God, love of neighbour. And I hoped, you know, I would like to think that I'd be judged that I have reached out to those in genuine need. And I think we need a compassionate society, absolutely. But what's going on at the moment is destabilising our country.
Okay.
Really putting such... But look, thank you, Neil. I think you're doing a great job.
Much obliged to you. Have a good day. Appreciate your thoughts. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Just on the National Women's Council, members are not individuals of the National Women's Council. They would be organisations with at least 10 members or more who advocate for women's rights. You can't just apply as an individual member. The National Women's Council represents groups who do advocate on behalf of women's rights, with at least 10 members or more in their individual groups that then can subsequently go on and join the National Women's Council. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I need to do some texts, guys, because there's loads of them on lots of different topics. Sinn Féin keep moving their goalposts. They wanted a yes in the referendum and even said that they'd run it again if it failed. They voted in favour of the hate speech, but now they're trying to distance themselves from it. They said that there should be no limits on immigration, and now are trying to turn this statement around now as the people have had enough and the protests are getting louder. Need I go on, says Paddy in County Tipperary. They're just saying now whatever they feel will win them votes, but it's too little too late. It's one thing to go into government and lose the support of the people, but to lose the support of the people when on opposition is a rarity. But here we are. Love the show. Neil, you talk about people's freedom. Ask Enoch Burke how his freedom of speech is going for him, says Matt in Mallow. Another one on Sinn Féin. Elections are coming. Sinn Féin are changing their tune. They must really think the public are stupid and will believe that they didn't back the government up with the so-called hate law bill. I voted Sinn Féin in the hope of change in the last general election, but I never again support them. Country's a mess while politicians drone on about transgender rights and other silly nonsense. Is it really silly nonsense because it doesn't affect you? We need real people in politics, not these self-serving clowns who are only interested in feathering their own nests. Tackle the migrant problem, tackle the homeless problem, scrap the idiotic hate law bill. I believe in two genders. If I said this openly, is this hate speech? Politicians, ask J.K. Rowling about that, I suppose. Politicians are going on about the definition of hate while the country is falling apart. A bit like Nero fiddling while Rome burns. There's not one decent politician in the whole country. Why do you bother getting these guys on, droning on with waffling nonsense as usual? I am a bemused listener. You know, Piers McCauley was jailed for 14 years for the manslaughter of Detective Jerry McCabe during a botched post office raid in County Limerick. That prompted a text which came too late for me to address that issue, say, for instance, with Donal O'Leary, as the texter was asking me to do, as to whether there should be legislation prohibiting the tricolour being used on terrorist coffins. And this, of course, was the use of a tricolour over Piers McCauley's coffin that many people got very upset and annoyed about. Including Simon Harris, actually, which one of the first things he said, actually, when he was got the nod for leader of Fine Gael. Is the right to freedom of speech also being implicated here? Yeah, and that's why it's so divisive. Like, anyway, the text says, if I say something to someone and a third party finds it offensive, am I in trouble or liable for legal proceedings? The whole thing's like the referendum, rushed and vague. Sinn Féin jumped on the yes, yes, then ran away when they saw it was no, no. They jumped on board hate, and then when the backlash came, they ran the other way. They're going down the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael route now. Same people, different names. They don't want change. They just want to look as if they want change. But what they really want is power. Politics in this country is a joke. Thank you for that. And thank you also to Fergal for waiting. Fergal, I do appreciate it. Good morning to you. Go ahead.
Morning, Neil. I was listening in there a while ago, and I've listened to a number of radio stations now talk about this, and no one can seem to get to the bottom of it, you know. And just got me thinking there that, like if I was to ask you a question, what can I say now that I can't say after it comes in? You'd find it very hard to answer that. And I'm sure your legal people that work in your radio station, when it does come in, if it does come in, how they would refactor your current policies to incorporate this new hate speech bill.
I don't know 100% what the right answer to that question is. You're posing a hypothetical, but here's some kind of response to that. You say something that I would have to immediately in my own brain disseminate and make a decision as to whether it was offensive, right? Or it was hate speech. Or you said something about a named individual would be defamation, right? But if you said something about a group of people that I would deem to be hateful or hurtful or offensive or could continue to put them in even more, like turn the heat up on them as a group or a minority that would lead to their safety or their feelings being hurt. I would have to ask you to retract it, withdraw it. I would have to push back against you. I would assume, having done that, that we would be okay in the sense that I didn't allow you just to go on what would be deemed by others a rant. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And even just in your answers, you gave me two scenarios. One was if I named somebody, defamation, straight away, that's off, okay? The second scenario was you spent maybe a minute trying to explain hate speech to me and you used the word assume, right? So factually, it's impossible to implement.
I know what you're saying.
For you guys.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying. Like, if your legal team has to go and refactor off your current policies and uplift them to suit this hate speech, they're not going to be able to do it.
A typical example of it would be something that could happen on air in the future, and that is if you were to say to me, I believe there are two sexes, two genders, man, woman, you're born that way, you can never change, this is just nonsense. Now, could be hate speech.
It could be, but you see, it depends on the radio show and what group think that they're aligned to, and the person ringing in.
No, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be in the live moment. It could be stored in a podcast. It could be shared by somebody else who ultimately gets it as a third party who never even heard it in the first place. Could take an action.
There you go. And where does it stop then?
Doesn't,
right? So you're always guilty if this comes in, right? The presumption is always going to be guilty until you can prove otherwise. And if you have the money to go to court to prove yourself otherwise, the people that will have the money to go after you are the people, if they have a particular groupthink and they don't like the way you're going, right, or the way you're carrying the conversation, which is against their groupthink, if they have the money, and we know there's lots of money out there, and depending on which NGO, which groupthink you're part of, you're up against the den straight away, and they can pull you into the courts all day long.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and another typical example of that, without dwelling on this much, but issues surviving the traveller community, there's quite an amount of action and interaction on this programme with people who would be somewhat critical, right? A lot of that already I can't broadcast because it would be offensive and it would be unfair. But they do have very, very, I know you talk about, say, lobby groups or NGOs. They would have a number of organizations who would be there to protect them and to support them and fight for their rights and push back. And they do push back. I've already had a breach of the Broadcast Act in that very issue, as an example, for instance. So you know, is that what you're talking about groups who are there to protect minorities? Because they do need, minorities do need protecting.
No, because every group. Okay, there's many groups in Ireland, right? There's groups that are represented, groups that are not represented. Like the majority of groups in Ireland that are not represented are working families. There is no group for those people. There's the government, and that's your local TD represents that, right? So everybody has an entitlement to get represented, and then we have a democracy, and you contact your local TD, and then
if somebody were to say all travellers blah 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 blah, or all refugees blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
you know, you can't say all people.
Yeah, but you're saying the words blah 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 blah. That's my point. If you can, you made a scenario a while ago that I could be turned off the radio for defamation of character if I name someone, right? And the defamation of character is defined, right? But hate speech isn't. So the blah 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 bit is always going to be blah 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 in someone's ears.
Yeah,
with the right backing, with the right groupthink agenda, can convert that blah 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 into a crime.
Yeah, I mean, I can go back far enough when there was it Section 21 of the Broadcasting Act, right? When I was on air, and this would have been back in the early 80s, for instance, Section 21 of the 31 is it Section 31 of the Broadcasting Act, which prohibited us at the time from talking to any member of a paramilitary organization or any member of a prescribed organization. It also included at the time Gerry Adams, for instance, who...
Correct, on BBC, they wouldn't play any audio clips.
No, they wouldn't, was I allowed to. I remember the first time I got an opportunity to talk to Gerry Adams was after they lifted that Section 31 of the Act. But before that, Gerry Adams wasn't allowed on the air, neither Adams nor McGuinness or lots of them. And actually, funnily enough, I remember a friend of mine who later went on to become a barrister. She was a journalist who was prosecuted under that act for inadvertently, in an interview, in the background, you could hear Gerry Adams' voice, although he wasn't on mic. That's the kind of world we were in the early 80s with regards to certainly media. Now, I'm wondering now, with the benefit of hindsight, was that a good idea to have a ban, say, for instance, on people like Gerry Adams?
Well, just that example with Gerry talking in the background, right? There was no intent to broadcast Gerry that time. That lady was obviously interviewing someone else.
Yeah.
He happened to be there in the background. But the intent wasn't there, so she shouldn't, shouldn't have been, right?
But you could get somebody
probably for it, you know what I mean?
You could have got somebody to act the words of Gerry Adams. So you could...
So you're on about coercion here, unless, as you said a while ago, defamation of character, that's defined. You have a legal policy in your business, in your radio show, to say that can't happen, and they give you guidelines due to the Broadcasting Act, and you know them, right? Could you imagine your legal team giving you something similar now for the hate speech? They wouldn't be able to do it.
I think a program like this would go and meet our maker.
Your research a while ago, like, he wouldn't exist, and once he don't exist, democracy is dead. Then,
all right, okay, nice one, Fergal. Appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. Call again. Thank you. Let me get another one here. It's Rob on WhatsApp. Good morning.
Hi Neil, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I see by your text you're comparing it to the recently passed Scottish hate speech law.
Yeah, that comes in on
the 1st
April
of April.
The 1st of April. With that, if I find offence with something that you have broadcasted over in Ireland, I can go to the Scottish police.
Are you, where are you now, Rob? Forgive me, are you in Scotland?
Edinburgh. I'm in Edinburgh.
Oh, lovely, lovely Edinburgh. Town. Lovely, lovely town.
Okay.
Okay. So, go on, your interpretation of it. Go ahead.
So I can find offence with something that you've actually said. I can go to the police here in Edinburgh, make a complaint against you on the hate laws. Then if they say, yes, that's a valid complaint, they can contact the guards, interview you, ask them to issue you with a warning, or if you are from a UK citizen, they can either issue you with a non-hate incident, okay, a non-crime hate incident against you.
A non-crime hate incident, is that what
hate
you said?
Incident, yeah, against you.
Is that a kind of like a criminal record then?
It'll be on your record, but it's a non-criminal part of your record.
Okay.
So then that could affect you if you were going for some of a job that needs a disclosure.
So if I went for something that needed vetting, then or something, it will exist on a police record. In your case, in Edinburgh, for instance.
Yeah. Yes, it would, Jeff.
Okay.
And that's what. Okay, and that comes into force on April 1st.
Okay, and what's the reaction been to that?
A lot of people don't like it, that it is actually too extreme. J.K. Rowling is possibly the big, and one of the Scottish Nationalist Party's MPs, Joanne Cherry, is against it because it is absolutely killing free speech in Edinburgh.
But it's too late now. It comes into effect on the 1st of April.
It's too late. And it can also affect, Edinburgh has the world's biggest festival, arts festival. So I can go to the Fringe and be offended by a comedian giving a joke.
A comedian on stage giving a joke,
yeah. Okay. Or even go to a play.
Okay, hold on there. Don't go anywhere because you're in a community. You're in Edinburgh where this becomes law on the 1st of April. I want to pick up on the conversation with you with the little time I've left after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Okay, the Scottish Hate Speech Bill, actually. I'm chatting with Rob, who's over in Edinburgh, says that a person commits such an offence if a person behaves in a threatening or abusive manner or communicates threatening or abusive material to another person or possesses it with a view to doing so. It's having it and even thinking about distributing it, right? Never mind distributing it. Yeah, and hatred is intended because of it or is likely to stir up hatred against a group. I also see that Scotland also has abolished blasphemy as a crime. So that's gone. Well, lots of others are introduced. Are you saying to me that if you listen to me in a podcast in Scotland, right? Explain that to me.
Okay, I could be listening to you either on a podcast or live, and I take offence with something that you say or one of the contributors says, I can then go to the police under the Scottish hate laws and say that I was offended because of X, Y, and Z. They'll listen to me. Then they'll come back and say, yes, we agree with you. Then they'll contact the guards who will interview you and then possibly issue you with a warning in Ireland for something that was reported in Scotland.
Is that not a bit of a stretch now, though?
No, that is... Okay, that is Joanna Cherry, who is a SNP MP in Westminster, has actually... who's also a barrister, that's what she has come out with, as has...
So this is a typical example of, firstly, how far-reaching and the arms of the law stretch across borders in this case, but how will the police in Scotland deal with this? Do you have plenty of police officers in Scotland?
No. No.
Okay.
They're taking 500 police officers off the front line to deal with this.
Your texter here says, Paddy says, the Scottish police are going to be driven demented with their hate speech laws.
They will. It'll be one of these that I pity poor J.K. Rowling. Her solicitors will actually make a bit of money because she's prepared to fight this all the way to the UK Supreme Court.
Paddy actually says, I don't know, this is tongue-in-cheek, he says, Scottish police are going to be driven demented with their hate speech laws at every Old Firm derby. 50,000 fans chanting hatred at each other.
It's every Scottish derby. it's every Scottish derby, but I can't see them doing that until they actually get somebody complaining against
it. But on a serious level, though, it comes into force on the 1st of April. Did the people of Scotland voice opposition to it?
Yes. Yes.
So
the media. Okay. And they won't listen. Unfortunately, we have an SNP Green Party coalition, and the Green are the minority party, but they're the ones who are wagging the dog. So the tail is wagging the dog on this.
Right. Okay. And there's a lot to be said about that, isn't there, with the Green agenda? I mean, I'm not being critical of the Greens, but they would have particular points of view on things that maybe traditional political parties wouldn't necessarily agree with, but for fear of losing power, they have to go along with the thoughts and beliefs of tiny parties.
Yes, they do. Plus the fact that we're up against now a party that a government that are more interested in independence. And they will drag independence into everything.
Okay. So from the 1st of April, the category is quite wide as to, what it covers and the different minority groups that it protects, right?
Yes. It covers, it protects a lot of people, but at the same time, it has a very broad brush on what is and isn't a hate crime.
So stuff that you would have on a mobile phone or at a laptop at home that you might be interested in, for God's sake, it could be a Trump speech, couldn't it? It could be something that Trump might say, right? That, if you shared it, could be found to be hateful in the eyes of another person who didn't agree with Trump, for instance, right?
Yeah. And again, I'm listening to you, or I could be reading the Echo online, and again I find something offensive, but it's considered published in Scotland because it can be read in Scotland.
No, but I'm just wondering about that, though. Would that be really the case, because it's a completely different jurisdiction, you know?
It's still considered, it is still under Scottish law, it will be considered.
But in Scotland, not the reach of the Scottish police over to the Garda Síochána to investigate something in a different, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
They'll have it in their power to contact the guards to investigate it.
Okay. Are you going to be much more careful now about what you say, what you do, what you think, what you store?
I'll think twice about sort of posting stuff online.
Will you think twice about having an opinion? Will you instead live a life where you just keep your mouth shut?
I have an opinion with people who I know and I can trust, but I'd be more careful talking to people in the pub, if you understand what I'm saying.
The only bit of advice I could give you there, pal, is trust nobody. Trust nobody. Have a good day. Thanks for listening, Rob. Stay listening. That's it, guys. We'll come back in the morning. Text 0868104106. Be part of the conversation. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.